This is David Duke. This is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting live worldwide to an audience in all parts of the planet. It is a program dedicated primarily to people of European descent, but it certainly is a program that's valuable for all people of the world, for we believe in preserving European heritage and freedom. But we also believe that every people on this planet has that same right. We're opposed to colonialism. We're opposed to globalism. We believe in freedom. And we think freedom is best found at home. That the bigger the government, the more transnational and transracial a government is, the worse a government becomes. You see, ladies and gentlemen, the closest government to the people is always the best government. How do people in, say, Lima, Peru, know what's best for the people of Missoula, Montana? Or, say, the people of Alberta in Canada? How do they know what's best for those in Madras, India? Ladies and gentlemen, every people has a right to preserve their way of life, has a right to have a society that reflects their own needs and desires. The bigger government gets, and world government is the ultimate form of tyranny, and that's precisely what globalism is reaching for. So we believe in what we call nationalism, but an enlightened nationalism, a nationalism in which people try to work out their differences with other nations, because war should be absolutely the very, very last resort. And we believe that these forces of massive capitalism, as well as socialism, as well as Jewish supremacism, have brought about many of the most catastrophic wars of not just the 20th century, but actually far earlier in world history. We believe that the First World War was a war of great death and great destruction, and truly an unnecessary war. We believe the Second World War was, again, a war that could have been avoided at the saving of the lives of 64 million people. We believe that the Korean War and the Vietnam War was certainly not a war that in any way served the interests of the United States nor the interests of those nations. People can work out their own issues. Even China's undergone a tremendous change, and Vietnam's undergone a tremendous change since the war. People can work out their issues. We don't have to impose democracy or any other sort of government or policy upon people. And who are we to say that other people should follow our plan or our policy? But we should be concerned. We all should be concerned about policies that affect our own people, our own neighborhoods, our own cities, our own states, and our own nation. And we have policies today at work in the United States of America, policies that are destroying the fundamental heritage, the beauty, the traditions, the values of America. I believe, you know, I spend a lot of time in Eastern Europe, and I teach over there, and I lecture and write, and I try to advise a lot of people in the political process, because America and American politicians and people involved in American politics have a lot of knowledge about how to run elections, to get out the vote, different processes of political issues and propaganda, if that's the right word for it, even though that's a dirty word these days. And I've been trying and working very hard trying to inform my fellow nationalists and fellow anti-Jewish supremacists about how to run effective elections. I've certainly proven that I can get some votes. I mean, I've received 65% of the European American vote in the state of Louisiana, even though I was outspent 100-1. and media. And even though the entire political establishment used every bit of their organization and operation and power and influence against me, they even went to the point of me that they would lose their jobs, that they'd lose their businesses if they dared to elect me to the governorship of Louisiana. People in some of the factories and plants along the Mississippi River, that, in fact, that's the most industrialized river corridor in the world, even more than the Ruhr Valley in Germany. They got little notices with their paychecks which said, if you vote for David Duke and he becomes governor, we're going to be moving the factory to Brazil and you're going to lose your job. Of course, that was an idle threat. They weren't planning to move, but this was a way to influence people. And even the Jewish supremacists themselves talked about their strategy in defeating me in my race for governor of Louisiana. And they themselves spoke about the fact that they hit on the master stroke. They themselves claim their victory came about because they learned how to economically blackmail the people of Louisiana. And of course, the Jewish-dominated media, such as the Newhouse-owned Times-Picayune, the most influential and powerful newspaper in the state, they went to work doing it. In fact, I remember very clearly American Medicine, and this goes again to illustrate how some of the Jewish supremacists combine their power, how they can reach out and organize in a team effort and defeat their opponents. The American Medical Association regularly sends 60,000 to 80,000 doctors, you know, well-paid and well-to-do doctors, into the city of New Orleans for their conventions. They have conventions at the Superdome, in fact. And there was a convention scheduled for the following year after the gubernatorial election. And the head of the American Medical Association at the time happened to be Jewish, and he was obviously vulnerable to the pressures of the Jewish extremists around them. So he sent a letter to the city of New Orleans, which said that if David Duke is elected governor, that they would likely cancel their convention in the city of New Orleans. Probably couldn't even do that legally because they had legal binding contracts. Cancel the convention in the city of New Orleans, which would cost the city of New Orleans, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars of revenue. It certainly would hurt every cab driver. It would hurt every food service person, every small restaurant owner, and many small hotel owners and other people in the city. It would hurt many, many people in the city of New Orleans. To show the power of something like that, I can illustrate it by a poll that the Times-Picayune itself did among the United Cab Company. The United Cab Company is a major cab operation in New Orleans, which is almost all white, has been for years. And these cab drivers, they know what's going on. Of course, they work the streets. They understand the realities of life. They see the crime. They see the realities of forced integration. They talk and they understand the realities of political corruption in Louisiana. And these cab drivers were practically 100% in favor of me, and they polled them. And they found in the first primary that these cab drivers were running about 95% in favor of David Duke. But then after the blackmail started, instead of getting 95% of the cab drivers, and when they thought, when they were told basically that they were going to lose their livelihood, that this would affect their income dramatically because all these conventions would be pulled from the city of New Orleans, that percentage of votes went from 95 to 75. And I tell you, I have to salute those 75% of the United Cab Drivers who voted for me, and so many others who did, in the face of this. In fact, they voted for me even knowing that they could have hurt the income of their family, or that they even thought that this could damage the income of their families if they voted for me for governor. Of course, all that's poppycock. People come for lots of reasons, and business and industry comes to Louisiana for reasons. And it's maybe true that some industry and some business would have been kept out of Louisiana because of my election to the gubernatorialship, especially with a campaign by our enemies. But at the same time, many businesses would have come to our state because of it. And if you have a state that's got a good low tax rate and a good system of their education and a state that really puts a throttle on the crime and so forth in areas, there would probably be many, many good, strong small, middle range, and even some big businesses that would come into the state of Louisiana. That's what attracts a business. How the schools are when you come in, how the economy is, how the tax rate is. And as governor, I certainly would have been a better force for those things. But anyway, they voted for me 75% in spite of the fact that many of them thought that their families would have been damaged, their income would have been severely affected by it. The Times-Picayune, when they got the letters from the American Medical Association, featured these letters with headlines in the paper. In fact, to show you the absolute disgusting bias of the paper, they literally took the letters from the American Medical Association, didn't just report on them, but reprinted. That is, put a facsimile, a copy of the letter in real size all across the front page of the paper, and put different colors to illustrate this threat to withdraw the convention from the city of New Orleans. And, by the way, they had almost no refutation of this from people in our camp, because we had a number of businesses lined up that said, well, we're going to come to New Orleans. And nobody was there to condemn this. There were no public spokesmen condemning this and say, how dare you threaten the state of Louisiana and try to intimidate and blackmail the state of Louisiana. And that's a repression of democratic values, a repression of all the things that we're supposed to believe in the United States of America. Instead, we had politicians just climb on the bandwagon and say, you see, we can't elect David Duke. And it was a big factor. And the Jewish press themselves talked about this factor and said this was the key in defeating me. This is the kind of operations that they have. But this power, ladies and gentlemen, is something that's exceedingly dangerous for the United States of America. It's got us into the Iraq War, which is catastrophic for the interests of the American people and catastrophic, truly, for thousands of Americans who've suffered loss of limb, our eyesight, our even their ability to reproduce, even their ability to have children. They've suffered terrible disfigurement. They will be freaks of body. And an impaired of mind, so many thousands who come back from Iraq. And for what? For America? For American security? We know now that was all a lie. For oil? Not even for oil, ladies and gentlemen. And we pay more for oil now than we ever did. And it's causing many businesses and homes and farms even to go out of business, to go bankrupt. People can't afford it anymore. Many people have hundreds of dollars of bills in fuel each month, and they commute to school, to home, to work, they have vehicles in terms of their jobs, in terms of their businesses, where they have to have tremendous fuel costs or shipping costs, and these fuel costs are resounding across society and driving many tens of thousands of businesses out of business and driving different couples into bankruptcy where they're losing their homes and losing their equity in their homes that they've worked for years and years to create. Now, in the midst of all this, we have things like such as the what the government recently did, what Condoleezza Rice recently did. And I've just got a copy here of the Jewish Telegraph Agency, which is one of the big Jewish publications. And their headline is, Appointment of Monitor Adds Teeth to the Fight Against Anti-Semitism. Washington, May 17. The U.S. State Department has just added a set of teeth to its fledgling office monitoring anti-Semitism. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice on Wednesday named Greg Rickman, a dogged investigator who has tracked the Swiss bank's role in the Holocaust, as the first special envoy for monitoring and combating anti-Semitism around the world. Jewish leaders unanimously agreed that the appointment would push the office monitoring anti-Semitism in existence by 18 months to the department's front burner. It creates a strong point person that will be able to coordinate all the different parts of our government that deal with anti-Semitism, said Mark Levin. What is anti-Semitism, ladies and gentlemen? I did a series of broadcasts on that, and I hope that some of you go back and look at our archives and listen to those broadcasts. Anti-Semitism basically is presented as hatred against Jews for no good reason historically, and a situation where Jews were always innocent in their relationship with Gentiles, and Gentiles in the conflict between Gentiles and Jews were always the guilty ones, were always the intolerant ones, the evil ones. But as you know, if you've seen my books, if you've read them, if you've read my articles, you know there's a lot more intolerance that exists among the radical extremist Jews than exists among the Gentile mainstream community. I show a picture on my website right now, which you can take a look at, of a group of Lubavitch rabbis in the White House of the United States celebrating with the new head of policy, Mr. Joshua Bolten. Lubavitch is a major Jewish group. They even teach now. Some of their rabbis teach in the White House. This is a group whose leaders and philosophy is that Gentiles are not human beings. I'm not exaggerating. They say that Gentiles are part of the animal kingdom. Furthermore, they say that Gentiles are of a different species, that Gentiles, in fact, have a satanic nature in their souls, and they say that the purpose of the entire world and all the Gentiles in the world, the purpose of Gentiles is to serve Jews, and everything is for the importance of Jews. It says that they are the DNA of God, that they're all Jesus Christ, and that Gentiles are something less. Ladies and gentlemen, that's extreme racism and extreme intolerance. And if we're concerned about anti-Semitism, where is our concern about anti-Gentilism? So this office of the Secretary of State, of Condoleezza Rice, Mr. Rickman, why don't they start a new office called the office or the a position of czar of anti-Gentilism, and they can start looking right in our own White House and start monitoring the writings of these Jews. As you know, I talked about the fact that one of the members of this crazy sect, Rabbi Ginsburg, I have a picture of it in the latest Duke report, which a lot of you are now just receiving in the mail. If you're not a subscriber, take time out, go to my website, davidduke.com, and subscribe. And we'll send you this latest issue. And we quote from Rabbi Ginsburg, got a great picture of him. He looks like the Wicked Witch of the West from The Wizard of Oz. We got a great picture of him, and he says in there, and in fact this is a quote from an article he wrote, not just an interview, for the Jewish Week, which is the largest Jewish publication in the United States of America, and he writes that if a Jew needs a liver and a Gentile is passing, an innocent Gentile is passing, would the Jew have the right to take the liver? And he answers in the affirmative. That's extremism, ladies and gentlemen. That's anti-Gentilism. And it's not just off somewhere in the wilds. It's not somewhere off in the diaspora of the West. It's in the White House. It's in the White House of the United States of America. And we have a responsibility to stop this. We have a responsibility. These people should not be teaching and preaching. They should not be in our White House. This is not the Knesset. And these people do not represent the values of the United States. And yet, that's the way it is. We have a White House that sometimes looks more like the most radical Jewish groups of Israel rather than that of our traditional founding fathers. The Jewish power in America, the Jewish supremacist power, and there are certain Jews that oppose them, they have pervaded almost every aspect of our culture, of our society. They dominate Hollywood. They dominate psychiatry today. They dominate our mores in so many different areas of our life. They dominate the music industry. They basically set the tone of what our children are supposed to listen to. They are the ones who've popularized gangster rap for our children. They are the ones who've made mainstream pornography, certainly something quite unhealthy and damaging to our people. They're the ones who've promoted opening our borders, and they've led the fight politically to open the borders. They're the ones who've kept us from the honest truth about race and the fact that there are intrinsic differences of humanity. And they've told us that it's somehow evil for us to recognize the fact that mankind has differences. And I think that recognizing those differences doesn't make one a racist or a hater. It makes one recognize the reality of God's creation, of nature, if you will. And it recognizes that fact, and it kind of celebrates those differences. And it says that all these differences and all these different cultures have a right to survive, including our own. They have worked tirelessly, and as I show on the website today, they've worked tirelessly to open our borders and to allow amnesty for these people who are not American citizens. And they have always thrived in multiracial, multicultural societies, and they seek that kind of society. Why do they seek such? Well, it's simply because they continue to maintain their unity, their agenda, and their direction. And they believe that if they live in a fractured society, while they maintain their own goals, they can dominate that society. It's a policy called divide and conquer, and I've illustrated it many times on my website. In fact, I quote Dr. Steven Steinlight, one of the leading Jewish minds of America, one of the former head of national affairs for the largest Jewish organization in the United States of America, and he writes it very bluntly in those terms that we will be able to continue our policy of divide and conquer and control America. He also writes, by the way, that he's against any sort of campaign finance reform. Well, why is that? That's because they're able, through their money and through their organized power, control the American political process against the interests of the majority of the American people, just by control of money. They don't want real campaign finance reform, and Steinlight says precisely that in his own writings to his own fellow Jews. And that's why we're not getting campaign finance reform. I mean, there's so many issues like this, ladies and gentlemen, that you will not understand why we have these particular policies till you begin to understand the Jewish supremacism and the Jewish agenda that exists in our society. It's not hatred to talk about this reality. It's not any sort of intolerance. It's certainly not stupidity or ignorance. It's fact. It's reality. And I urge you to read my book, Jewish Supremacism, or My Awakening. I urge you to read my website, to go into the depths of my website and read thoroughly. And when I have a citation, and there's many citations in my articles, to go and check out those citations and really dig deep. And don't believe everything I say, but think about what I say and compare what I say with what the enemy says. If you read both sides and you have an open mind, I truly believe that you will come to the same conclusions on these issues that I have come to. So now we have a new czar of anti-Semitism in the United States government. There's no czar of anti-Italians. There's no czar of anti-Anglo-Saxon. There's no czar of anti-whitism. I mean, and I tell you, there's a lot of that. How many times have we been given a collective guilt for white people, for slavery, for Jim Crow? How many times have we been given collective guilt for all kinds of things? Anti-Semitism is a perfect example of that. But why is there never any collective guilt levied on Jews? For instance, for their role in the slave trade, which can be documented by Jewish historians, or their role in the white slave trade in modern times, which they still control, or their role in organized crime. We have the image of the Italian gangster thoroughly burned into our consciousness, into our heads, by Jewish Hollywood's portrayal of the Italian gangster again and again and again and again. But how many Americans know that the largest and most powerful and most dangerous organized crime organizations in the world are controlled by Jews? And they've been doing this type of gangster activity not just for the last few decades, but for centuries, my friends. Centuries they've engaged in these in this kind of behavior. But they've got the best press in the world, and they've got the best public relations in the world. So they are busy right now telling everyone about the a little bit about the evil of the Russian mafia, which is itself a lie, because they're not truly Russians. They're Jews who come from Russia, and it's a double lie, really. But it's a lie that serves their agenda, so people don't understand what's really going on. We now have a monitor against anti-Semitism. When are we going to have a monitor in our government that will defend the rights of European Americans? And by the way, my friends, and I know that I have many listeners overseas, many listeners in Palestine, many listeners in the Middle East, many listeners throughout Europe, many listeners in Africa. I get relatively many emails from Africa and India and China today, even South and all over South America. You know, so ladies and gentlemen, why? Why in the world do we have these policies that go against European Americans, that go against Palestinians, and really try to dictate to the rest of the world for the aspirations and the agenda of this Jewish supremacist minority that has so much power and influence, not only in the United States, but really elsewhere around the world as well. Certainly their power in the press is not as great in Europe as it is in the United States, but the power of the press there is very unique. Jewish gangsters such as Berezovsky and Guzinski and others, Abramovich, can get shelter in places like Britain and Spain because they have allies there, this secret, this quiet society, this quiet brotherhood. And they have, like that song goes, they have friends in high places. Of course, I consider those friends in low places because today government has sunk to new lows. The government of this country, the United States of America, and the government of the European nations is not, they are not defending the interest of the people that live in our respective white homelands. They have opened our gates. They have endorsed policies that will literally allow us to be wiped from the face of the earth. We are being genocided, ladies and gentlemen. We are facing genocide. Our culture, our heritage, we will be minorities in our own country, and then faster and faster, even tinier and tinier, tinier and tinier minorities until we will literally be wiped from the face of the earth. This is not some sort of a fantasy I'm talking about. It's not some sort of a nightmare or a dream. This is a reality. Unless we begin to stand up and defend our heritage, our way of life, and show some courage in defending our homelands, defending our heritage, and defending our freedom. Enjoy being with you, and I hope that all of you again will use your fingers on your computer keyboards, send emails, send some links out to the show, get the links going out there, and let your friends and family hear this broadcast, and let's keep spreading the word around the United States, North America, South America, Europe, and the rest of the world. I'm fighting hard for you, I'm trying to tell the truth, and I need your support and your help to continue these efforts. Thanks so much, and I'll see you again tomorrow evening.
This has been a David Duke Worldwide Web Radio broadcast. For more information and to support our vital work, please visit www.daviddukedavidduke.com.